A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly three quarters of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
Hello and welcome to the Red Box Politics podcast in the Times. I'm Matt Chorley. This is the last in our series of specials from the party conference season. I'm in Glasgow with the SNP. Now, that sound you can hear in the background is the sound of SNP delegates enjoying their lunch and no doubt talking about independence, because bluntly, that is what they do. Although it's not officially on the menu here. One of the really striking things arriving in Glasgow and thumbing through the official agenda is that none of the motions and debates planned at the main conference hall mentioned independence at all. Looking around the conference centre, the SEC on the bank of the Clyde, there were lots of big yellow boards with the slogan Progress, listing the many achievements of the SNP government: scrapping the public sector pay cap, phasing out petrol vehicles, more money for schools, more money for hospitals, the new Queen's Ferry crossing, votes at 16. You name it, every area of Scottish life is covered there, with the small exception of whether or not it stays in the union. The party leadership seems to have tried to impose the message that they are not talking about independence as much as they were, acknowledging that perhaps people in Scotland have had enough of it, frankly. But how does a party whose whole reason for being is leaving the union keep party activists motivated, not least after almost 10 years of non-stop campaigning and near hysteria for the course? During this episode, I'll be speaking to some SNP MPs about whether or not there is a way back for the party, or did it peak back in 2015 when it won all but three of the MPs in Scotland before losing a third of them in June this year. I will also take a look back over Nicola Sturgeon's big conference speech, in which she laid out her ambition for another 10 years in Parliament. Is that a sign of someone who hasn't quite checked electoral reality, or just the only way of G-ing up the party faithful? But first, the sort of conference conversation that I like. I sat down in a pub with Hamish McDonnell, the Scottish political editor of The Times, and Kirsty Blackman, the SNP MP, to discuss, amongst other things, the impact of Brexit on the fight for independence, and whether or not this party conference has been a bit flat.
Yeah, I think it is a fair criticism. I mean, I think that, you know, Kirsty will probably disagree with me on this, but you know, you have to see the SNP in the context of where it's been over the last few years. And when you look back to 2014, referendum on independence, 2015, huge surge in membership, and the SNP was riding high all through that time, there was always going to be a drop-off after that. There was going to be a time when the SNP conference was not the great sort of explosion of hysteria that you talk about, and this is it. And the SNP have come here on the back of losing a third of the seats that they had in the general election, and so yes, it is a bit flat, it is a bit dull. And you know, I think that people are looking for something to give them a bit of a boost.
Kirsty, is it just that after 10 years, the party's finally just behaving like a normal party in government?
I don't think the party's behaving like a normal party in government after 10 years. If you look at the programme for government that we had, I think that inspired a huge amount of excitement, actually. And from political commentators that wouldn't normally be excited by things that we say, there was across the board, people were keen to think about and talk about kind of bold and radical policies. So I think that's hugely positive. I mean, you would expect things to be slightly disappointing after the football result we had. But, you know, I hesitate to believe that our conference is flatter than the Tory conference, given the lack of leadership that they have, and we very clearly have got a strong leadership team in our party, given the Tories are in chaos and infighting, and we don't have that. We are united. We are a fantastic group of MPs and MSPs that are all working together for a common aim of a better Scotland.
Now, one of the things that struck me, and having been at the Tories last week as well, is just the mentality of parties. You had the Labour Party, who lost the election but behaved like they won. The Tory party spent the whole time over-analysing and over-apologising and feeling dreadful about the fact that they ended up with their leader still in number 10. And what's interesting is actually the SNP, having lost, as Hamish said, a third of your seats, there doesn't appear to be that sort of wound-licking and sort of retreat into all what went wrong. Basically, you're pretending almost like June didn't happen and carrying on in the same way. Actually, it's one of those things where if you project the confidence of people who've won, people forget that you did, that you suffered losses.
If you look at what happened after the election, absolutely, we didn't win, you know, 56 out of 59 seats in Scotland, but you really wouldn't expect us to do that twice. Nicola Sturgeon said after that we're going to have a period of reflection where we're going to look at where we were, we're going to look at what the electorate had said to us. And I think the result of that has been looking at things like the programme for government. So actually we've done that. We've done the kind of looking and reassessing and having a wonder about what people thought of us after the election. We're beyond that now. So we're now on to the stage of, we've written something new, this is what we're thinking about, and this is the way we're going to go forward. So we don't need to do wound looking. It's past.
Now, Hamish, one of the things that struck me on the way up when I was going through the agenda for what was on it conference, all sorts of policy ideas on under 18 serving in the army, the tampon tax, the internet, nuclear weapons. There was one thing that was really missing, and I went through it a couple of times. I did a control F to try and find it. There was no mention of independence. Now, to a layperson coming up from London to the SNP conference, that seems odd to me. Can you explain, and I'll ask Kirsty for her explanation in a sec, but what's your take on why that is?
Well, on the surface, the party is trying to move away. I mean, the theme of this conference is to say, right, we're going to try and part the constitutional stuff. Not just independence, but Brexit as well. Brexit's in the background, but we're going to try and part that and really concentrate on domestic policies to set the government in Scotland up for the next few years. So that's the theme. That's what the leadership are trying to do. But then if you listen in the fringes and you listen to the podium speeches, and you know, all the leadership people will say this, independence will be there. The issue of independence will come up. You know, Nicola Sturgeon has said it herself in various interviews that she's done, that she is not going to retreat from having another independence referendum, and it would be odd if she did. But yes, you look through the agenda, there's all sorts of interesting things there, but in a sense there doesn't need to be independence, because that they do want to park it and park it for as long as they can.
Chris, do you think that's part of the reason why the SNP has become more interesting? That parking independence to one side has meant that you've come up with more interesting domestic policies, which have, you're right, after 10 years in government, that's unusual for a sitting government to do that. But actually, it's suddenly meant by focusing on the domestic agenda, that's just made the SNP more interesting.
But we've always focused on the domestic agenda. It's just that we've been accused of not focusing on the domestic agenda. If you look at...
You're laughing, Hamish, you're laughing.
They're focusing on the domestic agenda now, but no one can say that the SNP has not been concentrating on constitutional politics for the last 5 years. That's what they've done. The referendum on independence, and then the follow-up to that, then we had Nicola Sturgeon saying, yes, I'm going to have another one. If you do that kind of thing, it's going to overshadow all the domestic stuff you've done.
Is there part of you that's a little bit sick of constitutional conversations?
No.
Do you think that some people in Scotland might be a bit sick of the constitutional conversation?
I think some people are probably pretty sick of constitutional conversations, but when you've got a Tory government who have pushed for Brexit and a number of whom support Brexit under the banner of take back control, then there are constitutional issues associated with that. That has a big impact on how the constitution looks. So whether or not independence is on the agenda, people are having to talk about the constitution because we're having to talk about whether or not the powers that are coming back from the European Union will be reserved again by the UK, and or whether or not Scotland will see those.
Waiting outside the pub in now, I saw two people walking past carrying yes flags. I don't know if they've been walking around non-stop for 3 years. They may well have been. But explain this to me as a layperson who doesn't follow every twist and turn of the independence debate. What is the logic of why you should stay in the EU but not stay in the UK? Why is one union, pooling resources and decision making and safety in numbers, why is one okay but not the other?
The EU and the UK are structured completely differently. If you look at things in pure financial fiscal terms, right, the majority taxes that are collected in Scotland then go to the UK Treasury, and then the UK Treasury gives some of that money to Scotland, and they do it by some bizarre method about the Barnett consequentials. So basically, if they put up health spending in England, population share of that will go to Scotland. So the problem for that is the UK government are not making decisions about how to support the health system in Scotland. They're not giving Scotland the money that it needs. There is no needs basis of the Barnett formula. It's purely done on a population share basis. So there is no understanding and no funding of our services that suit the people of Scotland. So the block grant goes to the Scottish government, and then it has to decide how to divvy up the funding. Now, that is an asymmetrical relationship. The UK government holds all of the cards in regards to that. The UK government, you can kind of understand why they do look at population centres like the southeast of England and think, how can we benefit the economy of the UK as a whole? Most people live in the southeast of England, let's do things.
But isn't that the same with the money that we give to the EU, that they decide, Brussels decides where the money goes? We give more money to the EU than we get back. That's just part and parcel of being in a club.
But the difference with the EU is the UK is giving the EU money rather than the UK giving the EU all the money and the EU giving them a slice back. That's how it works. So actually, it's about them paying a little bit, you know, paying subs, if you like, into the club to be members of the club. Whereas for Scotland, the UK is taking all our money and then giving us some dinner money back.
The Brexit debate has made the independence debate more complicated, because immediately after the Brexit vote happened, Nicola Sturgeon seemed to think or hope that this is going to lead to some increase in support for independence, because 60% of people in Scotland voted to stay in the EU, and she thought that would transfer into people saying, well, if we went independent, then we can stay in the EU. That hasn't happened, and that's part of the reason why the issue's been slightly parked. How complicated do you think the Brexit issue will need to get, or how bad do you think the deal would have to be for that to sort of shift the dial in the way that actually in the last 18 months we haven't really seen a shift in the independence dial at all?
You know, everything in politics over the next few years will be hugely decided by what happens in Brexit, and we can't tell. It's very hard to tell at this stage what's going to happen. If we get to a situation where there is not just a hard Brexit, but we're looking at no deal at all, it's difficult to see how that's going to affect the electorate. But it may be it shifts a lot of people in Scotland across to the independence case, if the independence case is then saying, we want to get away from what is turning into an absolute disaster, and we want to go to Europe. But you're right. At the start, there wasn't that shift. I think Nicola Sturgeon thought that there'd be such an sort of outrage within Scotland that, in a sense, England had voted to leave and Scotland hadn't, that people would then jump on the independence bandwagon. Now, some did, but some actually went the other way. And you've got pro-leave, pro-independence supporters, and we've seen some of them at the conference here, who were saying, hold on, you know, all the motions and so on, and what the leadership wants is a very, very pro-EU stance. And there is a strand within the SNP membership which says, no, we want to be out of the UK and we want to be out of the EU, and they don't like the fact that everything is, there's an assumption on the leadership's point of view that one leads to the other. So I think it is complicated, but it's very difficult at this stage to tell quite where Brexit is going. And yet, I think the electorate is very, very volatile. And the pro-independence camp could get a big boost if things really do go south as far as Brexit negotiations are concerned.
Now, we've seen in a YouGov poll for the Times that on the projections for the Holyrood elections, the pro-independence majority of the Greens and the SNP looks under threat. More people think that there shouldn't be another referendum for 5 years than I think there should be. And they see that people don't seem convinced you should have a referendum at the end of the Brexit talks or before one. So do you think that the time, quite a lot needs to happen the next year or so before, you know, for things to move? At what point do you think is the right point for Nicola Sturgeon to put independence back on the agenda?
Well, I think that she's faced with a difficulty in the sense that 2021 point is important, because there is no guarantee that that Nicola Sturgeon will get a pro-independence majority at the next election. So she has until then to call a referendum if she can, but she's at least put off for a year the point at which she will make the decision. And even by this time next year, I'm not entirely sure that we're going to really know where we're going with the Brexit negotiations. I mean, I was listening to somebody, one of the experts talking today, who said all EU negotiations, they tend to, four-fifths of the time, nothing happens, and then things happen at midnight. And so if we work on that basis, we probably won't know what's going on between the EU and the UK at that point. We'll have to wait until that last little bit when things will move. So at this time next year, Nicola Sturgeon may not know. The timing may still not be clear. And then if we get into the transition phase after 2019, again, it's difficult. So I think Nicola Sturgeon's in a difficult position. She wants to put the question to the Scottish people at some point before 2021, and yet nobody knows what's going to happen between then and now.
And Kirsty, Nicola Sturgeon's saying this week, 10 years in government, let's talk about the next 10 years. Projecting forwards, you know, 10 more years for the SNP. Where do you think the threat is for the SNP? Is it the Labour Party? Because in the election this year, the general election this year, both the Labour Party and the Tories came back more strongly than I think probably even they expected. Where is the threat? Like you said, having been at such a high level before, where is who poses the greatest threat to the SNP?
I think that's a really interesting question. I don't think in the election this time that we saw many of our voters actually voting for other people. We saw some of our voters staying at home and not coming out and not being as enthusiastic about the SNP as they've been previously. I think, you know, obviously there was a Corbyn bounce.
Even in Scotland, because there had been a debate about whether or not he was big.
I said previously, if Corbyn was to turn up to a big music festival in Scotland, he certainly wouldn't get the reception that he got at, you know, somewhere like Glastonbury. And I think part of that is actually because people in England have lacked that kind of progressive voice to vote for. They've not had anybody on the left that's been making a clear case for policies on the left, whereas in Scotland people have already got that. They've already got the SNP that's been making the case for these policies, and a lot of the things that Jeremy Corbyn is suggesting are things that the SNP are already doing or already are policies. So I don't really know where the threat is going to come from. I think we have seen the Scottish Tories, who went into Westminster full of fire and really excited and how they were going to defy Theresa May, and then they just all fell into line behind her. We've seen the Scottish Labour Party, who have not been terribly competent. They're currently looking for a new leader. That seems to have caused even more infighting than there was previously in Scottish Labour. So I think the alternative propositions for the Scottish people are not very positive at this moment in time.
Try to get people enthusiastic and excited year after year after year is difficult.
It is difficult to keep people enthusiastic and excited, and it's difficult to keep people for voting for more of the same when actually for some of them, because of the changes to Tory government policy, particularly around benefits and things like that, you know, their life's pretty rubbish, and you can understand why they would want to kick out a bit and, you know, be a bit unhappy at whoever is in government. I think, you know, we've still got the issue that some people don't understand which bits are devolved and which bits are reserved. So we need to continue to make the case. We need to continue to talk about the good things that the Scottish Government is doing, and I'm sure we will continue to do that. We need to continue to talk about how Tory austerity is harming people, and we will continue to do that. I think the biggest unknown is what's going to happen in relation to Brexit. So we are a long time after the Brexit vote. How is it that we don't have any idea? I understand the point about, you know, at the point at which the EU negotiators will suddenly fall into line or not fall into line, and the UK will fall into line. But the issue is for businesses that they needed to know 6 months ago, you know, 12 months ago, they needed to be able to make decisions about where they were keeping their HQ, where they were keeping their people. Actually, you know, 3 weeks out from the leave date is far too late for businesses, and therefore we will see the economic impact of this. However, you know, at whatever point the decision's making, businesses are already bailing out.
Let's go back to the SNP conference. Where's the fun? What's the best? Do you enjoy conference? I was surprised to see the SNP karaoke starts at 7 o'clock in the evening. All the other conferences, it happens about midnight when everyone may have already had a drink. 7 o'clock, that's like almost work hours.
Are you suggesting we haven't had a drink by 7 o'clock?
Well, that's what I wondered. Maybe it's because, you know, the nights are drawing in and you...
The SNP conference is a massive set piece event. It's run by the students and it's absolutely fab. It's a really, really good event and a huge number of people turn up. I think it makes quite a lot of money for the Young Scots, which is absolutely brilliant.
And what's your song?
I don't do karaoke. If you check my Twitter bio out, it says, can't sing.
That doesn't normally stop people doing karaoke. I hate karaoke, so I'm with you. Hey, Mish, if you were to find yourself at the SNP students karaoke night, what would be your song?
Well, the SNP conference, always, if you want to really get a hit at the SNP conference, you have to sing some slow Scottish folk song that goes back centuries, and that way you'll get everybody on their feet. That's what... To me, SNP conferences always used to be about that thing. Late night in the bars, someone with a guitar would start singing, and that there was more of that kind of, you know, misty-eyed look that always has been a part of the SNP conference, rather than your kind of upbeat karaoke that you might get at Labour Party.
The perfect ending would be for you to burst into song, but I sense that...
I'll leave that one, Matt.
I sense that you're not going to. Hamish Kirsty, thank you very much.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Okay, I'm joined now by Stuart McDonald, defence spokesman for the SNP in Westminster. Stephen Gethin's international affairs, but particularly Europe is very much on your beat. So, gents, people keep telling me the conference is a bit flat. Is it a bit flat?
Not
Stuart.
You can't have a flat conference in Glasgow for a start, but there are, I think, more members here than last year, which I think was the biggest. More stalls and exhibitors here than ever before as well. So the idea that it's flat is rubbish. I think you're just talking to people with hangovers.
you could well be right. What about you, Sue?
Look, just because Nicola's voice hasn't gone and we're not all falling out with each other doesn't make it a flat conference. It might be a flat conference for the journalists who had all that excitement with Labour and the Tories falling out with each other. This is what a united conference looks like.
And are you confident that all the letters are going to stay stuck to the backdrop as well?
Well, for years we've been projecting the onto the back of the conference. I'm not sure if that's the plan this year, but that's what we've been doing. So, subject to the power staying on, fingers crossed that the lights don't go out, it should be okay.
So, one of the things that struck me speaking to people the last couple of days is this question of independence hadn't been on the agenda. We assume that Nicola Sturgeon will talk about it in some way. She talks about Scotland making its own decisions and that sort of thing. Is there a risk if independence is off the table, at least for the time being, until public opinion turns, you have to sort of almost reinvent yourself as a party which is for other things rather than just independence?
Well, first of all, we all agree on independence, so having a debate on it, you know, I mean, I think you get a fairly overwhelming vote. But The SNP's been about all sorts of things for 10 years. Remember, we're a decade in power when we've delivered all the things that Labour's just starting to get round of, like free tuition fees, free prescription charges, you know, the world-leading climate change legislation. And in spite of the fact that we've been in power for 10 years, we're also ahead in the opinion polls as well, something that no other political party has managed. So this transformation has already taken place.
Stuart, if we had peak Nats, peak SNP, given that what happened in the 2015 election, you had all but three of the seats in Scotland, in a way, after that, the only way was down.
Look, can you imagine if we get 35 MPs elected in 2015? Would have been, you know, cock-a-hoop with joy.
I know that's the line. Nicola Sturgeon keeps it, but you didn't. You got 56, and then you went down to 35.
That's true, but we've still got a majority of seats, and obviously we're deeply sorry to lose lots of good and able colleagues and some big names in particular, but it's true in politics, what goes up does come down, and the SNP will be, you know, subject to the same forces as any other party, particularly one that's in government. But what you can see at this conference, as Stephen said, is a conference united. I get that you guys had a great weeks of entertainment, a Labour and Tory conference. This is a conference that's getting on with the job. And on the thing about the lights going out, yesterday at the diplomatic reception, we didn't know that the lights were powered by sensors, and during a speech by the Cabinet Secretary, when everyone was standing still, the lights went out because nobody was moving around.
I did something worse. I was in a fringe at the Lib Dems and it was packed.
It is worse.
That alone is worse. And I was standing up at the back and I leant backwards and suddenly realised I was leaning against the dimmer switch that basically turned all the lights off. But before anyone noticed, I just leant back again and switched them back on again. And that was the most exciting thing that happened at the fringe in a whole hour. So, just very quickly then, what does the SNP need to do next? Because what struck me is the Tories were sort of, they're embroiled in this inquest as to what went wrong in June. It doesn't feel like the SNP is doing that. Some of your colleagues I've spoken to think that maybe you ought to be doing that a bit more to look at what went wrong. Is that a fair criticism that you need to reflect on losing quite so many seats and how you turn that around again?
I think all of us speak to our local parties about, look, something that I even did after 2015 when we had a good result was go back to my local party and say, how can we do things better? How do we continue to engage? We keep on working. You know, we didn't stop chapping doors. We didn't stop speaking to people. But we've also got a job of work to do nationally as well, which is you've got Brexit. The SNP are united on this. I've got a job to do, Stuart's got a job to do, to represent our constituents down at Westminster, try and work with other political parties where we can. So, if you like, the campaigning doesn't stop, but then it never did stop. But actually, the politics needs to keep on going because folk expect us to get on with the job as well.
Do you, presumably, you both prefer being at home in Scotland than being down in Westminster? How have you, it's been a couple of years now, you've both been MPs. Have you grown to enjoy life in Westminster?
No, it's just the most odd place ever, but not just, you know, we're not just here at home, but we're having this conference in my home city of Glasgow, just a wee bit too north of the river for me, but never mind. But I want to just address this point. The thing to remember is that no matter what else is offered in politics, we offer the boldest idea in politics in Scotland, which is the creation of a new nation state. And that will always need refining, that will always need constant reviewing and constant work, but it's happening. We just don't have these fights in public like our opponents.
Oh, that's the party political broadcast bit. What about you, Steve? Do you enjoy life in Westminster?
I sort of put up with life in Westminster, but I also had a baby 2 weeks before polling day, or my wife did rather. So getting home's really nice, and that commute to London every week is murder. But look, plenty of people have got bits of their job that they like and bits of their job that they don't like, and the commute to London isn't great. Westminster is a bit of a bubble, but I suppose we're there because we're trying to do ourselves out of a job at Westminster.
We all have bits of our jobs we don't like. I've spent 4 weeks going to party conferences. So there we are. it's been absolutely fabulous. Gents, really good to meet you. Stuart McDonald, Stephen Gethin. Thank you very much.
The late, great Canon Kenyon Wright once said this: there is another way. It is marked the road of hope. Hope for a new nation at ease with its past, confident in its present and hopeful for its future. This is the time to believe in and work for that better future. This is the time to put ourselves firmly in the driving seat of our own destiny. That is what the people of Scotland deserve. Conference, That is what we will deliver. Thank you.
So literally, Nicola Sturgeon is still on the stage taking the applause. I'm joined by Alex Massey, Times columnist in Scotland. So Alex, was your spine tingled?
No, it was left untingled, I'm afraid, Matt. And that was a fairly perfunctory speech, actually, by Nicola Sturgeon. I think the big reveal was the announcement of a publicly owned energy company that would operate on a not-for-profit basis to compete with the big energy firms. But that was really about it in terms of domestic policy.
They liked it, though. It was one of the first big enthusiastic standing ovations.
That's true. That was something that went down very well. And the rest of the speech, however, was a sort of laundry list of domestic policy announcements that didn't really move us on very much from the programme for government announced last month. And on the biggest issues of all, on Brexit and independence, Nicola Sturgeon actually didn't have very much that was new to say or noteworthy to say. She said that that it sort of confirmed the sense that Brexit in particular is going to have a massive impact on the future, not just of Scottish politics, but obviously of British politics. And we don't really know exactly yet what that impact is going to be. The SNP remain convinced, and this was a theme running throughout this conference, that it will one day play to their advantage, that the chaos of Brexit will inspire people of Scotland to consider independence once again. And they think that they can have a referendum before the next Scottish Parliament elections in 2021, although again, how you actually get to that remains unexplored and undefined.
And so when it was interesting, it felt sitting in the hall like obviously the delegates were desperate for the big clap line on independence. It never really came. Even in the one standing ovation there was for talk of independence, only about, I'd say, half three quarters of people got up. And she said, we will always make the case for independence. Which isn't quite the same as, and it's just around the court.
Yeah, I mean, there's a certain...
We're going to keep on talking about it, but I don't know when it's going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, there was a certain, element of, the Pope reminding his audience that he's a Roman Catholic about that. But you're right. I mean, I thought that the speech, while well-received by the party faithful, didn't send them into raptures of delight the way previous conference speeches from Nicola Sturgeon have done. And that, I think, reflects the general uncertainty that we have at the moment, that this was a conference, I think, that was largely about holding a line, about waiting to see what happens in terms of Brexit and other developments, and in that sense, the SNP is responding to events rather than making the political weather, to refer to an old political cliche, and that is something
that's
quite difficult.
They're not used to that, are they? Because they've been used to, for the last 10 years, being in the ascendancy. Winning in Holyrood, winning almost all the seats in Westminster elections, even during the independence referendum campaign, they were making the case, they were on the front foot. And to be in this sort of holding pattern, waiting to see what happens down in London with Brexit,
I think
it's difficult.
It is difficult. And, Angus Robertson, who's speaking, of course, lost his seat in June. But, he reminded the conference that, the SNP has won the last seven elections at all levels of Scottish democracy. They are the Scottish establishment now. They are the political masters, if you like. And so there is a difficulty in being both the dominant party in Scotland and at the same time vulnerable to external events. And that is something that the party is still coming to terms with, and still coming to terms actually with the setback of the general election result, in which it lost 21 seats and a significant share of its vote. And that is something that I think has meant that it can't actually now shame the UK government into delivering a second independence referendum that the majority of people in Scotland don't want anytime soon. And so that means that it will have to be delayed until after, as Nicola Sturgeon puts it, the general terms of Brexit are clear. Now, what that means and when that will be possible, is again up in the air. And so, this was a sort of, the SNP exists on a sort of plateau now. It's not declining massively, but it's no longer, hitting the heights or you don't have the sense of a party with an irresistible momentum and march towards history on its side.
Now, I thought in terms of the politics, one of the striking things is that any other party conference or any other politician from a different party, they never comment on polls. They are sort of a line that they don't comment on polls. There's only one poll that matters, and that's one of the polls. The SNP are obsessed with polls.
Yeah.
They're constantly referring to individual polls. They seem particularly obsessed with the Times' most recent YouGov poll, which puts the Conservatives in third place behind the Labour Party. And they're upset. Every single sort of speech seems to have mentioned it. And yet, in her speech overall, Nicola Sturgeon reserved almost all of her attacks with the Conservatives, both at Westminster and with Davidson, with the Labour Party only mentioned sort of in passing. So they clearly still see the Tories as a threat and want to try and establish the idea that they're in third place.
I think that's true. You know, the question is, you know, how much higher can Ruth Davidson take the Scottish Conservatives is something that is going to be one of the main stories in Scottish politics over the next couple of years. Equally, what sort of Labour Party emerges from the current contest and will a, if you like, more left-wing populist Labour Party be able to eat into the SNP support amongst left-wing Scots? And that's, you know, one of the things that will also be interesting. There's also, as you say, this obsession with polls and so on, and particularly good polls and so on. So I sometimes refer to it as Sally Field nationalism. So if you remember the actress Sally Field, when she won her Oscar, she sort of gave this gushing speech and so on. You know, I can't deny that right now you really, really like me. And there's a lot of that in Scottish nationalist circles as well. You know, they're obsessed with external validation. You know, so anytime anyone says something nice about Scotland and so on, you know, Scotland's the most beautiful country in the world and so on, that's a massive, you know, the easy cheer line for the SNP and so on. Look at us, aren't we great? And of course, that's to be contrasted with the sort of hellish dystopia of a Westminster government in England, a Tory government in England and the rest of the UK and so on, that is ravaging the countryside and laying waste to our cities and our futures.
So just as we wind up, they're literally dismantling the stands around us. What do you think lies in store for Scottish politics over the next few months and years?
Well, I mean, the SNP have been in power for 10 years, and so it is not surprising that a little bit of the shine has come off them, that they are not as popular as they once were. At the same time, they do remain the dominant party in Scottish politics, and are likely to do so for the foreseeable future. The Times poll that you were referring to earlier suggests as much as well, that if there were to be an election, they would lose a few seats at Holyrood, but they would remain the largest party by far. And that is the sort of new establishment, the new status quo in Scottish politics, and doesn't look likely to change anytime soon, because it remains the case that overall your political views in Scotland are dictated by your constitutional preferences. And for as long as, you know, 40-45% of people support independence, the SNP are going to find themselves in a position that it is, that if not unassailable, is certainly very hard to assail.
And it'll be interesting to see what happens in terms of enthusiasm for independence alongside Brexit. Does a bad Brexit deal make people more likely to want to go it alone with independence? Or do they look at the complicated mess of Brexit and think, well, we don't want to go through all that all over again. It's bad enough trying to get out of one union but leaving two too complicated. And nobody really knows how those two things play out.
Exactly. That is the great core fundamental question upon which so much else will depend, I think. And at the moment, if you speak to SNP people, the general view is that Brexit will eventually work to their advantage. That said, within the party, there are some voices who worry that perhaps it might not. You know, so that's the question. You know, what if we're wrong about that? What do we do then? Is the sort of thing that all political parties need to ask themselves, and not nearly enough do. You know, you need to have a plan B, sometimes even a plan C, and it's not yet clear that the SNP have that. But then, to be fair to them, with regard to Brexit, you know, they are not the only party without a plan.
A plan, yeah. Never mind plan B, a plan A. A plan A would be good. But it seems like we've come to the end of the Commons season, and nobody anywhere knows what the hell's going on, and that's why politics is so interesting, if in times slightly daunting. But thanks to Alex, also my other guests, Hamish, Kirsty, Stuart and Stephen. As ever, you can sign up to my morning email briefing at thetimes.co.uk/redbox and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and Android and all the usual places where you get it. But for now, from me, Matt Chorley in Glasgow, it's goodbye.
Thank you for downloading. To discover more, head to the Times.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Quince.co.uk.